Welcome to Simply Scottish, a podcast of all things Scottish, with music, features, interviews, and more, on the web at www.simplyscottish.com.
Welcome to Simply Scottish. I'm Andrew McDermott, your host. Thanks for listening today. Whether you were born in Scotland, have Scottish ancestry, or just enjoy the culture and the history, this show is for you. Let me know you're listening. Drop me a line at podcast@simplyscottish.com. You can like us on Facebook to get updates and a chance to win Scottish music every month. That's at facebook.com/simplyscottish. And finally, to listen to other episodes of Simply Scottish, log on to the official website, simplyscottish.com. This week, a closer look at John Muir, immigrant, explorer, naturalist, and conservationist. We'll start with a rousing piece by Brother, a fusion of Australian and Scottish.
Yeah.
You're listening to Simply Scottish. On a different episode about the Scots in America, we briefly highlighted the legacy of John Muir. This time, a closer, more intimate look at the man considered to be the father of America's national parks. Muir was born in Dunbar, Scotland, in 1838. As a child, Muir quickly developed a love affair with nature, with long walks around his hometown hunting for birds' nests and explorations of the coastline. On weekends, he was able to roam free, but on school days, his lessons were indoors. A typical weekday for Muir as a boy in Dunbar went as follows. Breakfast was oatmeal porridge with a little milk or treacle. After that, it was off to school. At noon, he and his friends would race home for the midday meal, called dinner, usually a vegetable broth, a small piece of boiled mutton, and barley meal scone. Between spelling, history, arithmetic, and geography lessons at school, Muir might get caught up in a fight or two and would enjoy views of the sea and passing ships from the school playground. The evening meal was called tea and was served when kids returned home from school. It consisted of half a slice of white bread, barley scone, and warm water with a little milk and sugar in it, called content, which warmed, but it didn't cheer its drinkers. After tea, a visit to Grandfather Gilray, who would listen to Muir and his friends recite the next day's lessons. Then home again to supper, usually a boiled potato and a piece of barley scone. Then family worship, and to bed. When Muir was a youngster, certain stories captivated him, especially those about animals. One such story was of Llewellyn the Great, a Welsh prince of the late 12th and early 13th centuries. According to legend, Llewellyn had a great hound named Gelert that he brought with him during his contests with the English. On one such expedition, Llewellyn also had his infant son with him, whom he left in a cradle in his camp under the care of his faithful hound. While Llewellyn was gone, a wolf from the neighbouring mountains found its way into his tent and would have devoured the child, save for Gelert, who destroyed the wolf after a desperate fight. When Llewellyn returned in the evening, he found the tent on the ground and his hound covered in blood next to the cradle. Thinking the dog had harmed or killed his child, Llewellyn quickly drove a spear into Gelert's side. About the same time he heard the cry of his child, uninjured, in his crib, and behind it the mangled body of an enormous wolf. Llewellyn was filled with joy and grief. He mourned over his loyal, brave hound, burying him and erecting a tomb over him as a hero. From that time, the valley was called Beth Gelert. In 1849, when Muir was 11 years old, his family emigrated to the United States, living first on a farm in Wisconsin. If Muir had learned to love and appreciate nature during his first 11 years in Scotland, that passion for God's natural world was about to be magnified 100-fold as he began to explore a new world. Here's the Black Irish Band with the Ballad of John Muir.
From the banks of Scotland to the California coast, into the mountains like a child. They said that he was crazy for the trees, they were his friends. He was a man of nature, would defend her till the end. Across the rivers far and wild, into the forest like a mother to her child. How the canyons and the mountains sing, John Muir's out there if only we believe. How men cut the forest, move the earth to build the mines. Gold the only lure for their crimes. John would never let the axe bite or the shovel fall. He tried to save the beauty for us one and all. Cross the rivers far and wild, into the forest like a mother to her child. How the canyons and the mountains sing, John Muir's out there if only we believe. Thank you. the rivers far and wild, into the forest like a mother to her child. How the canyons and the mountains sing, John Muir's out there if only we believe. The rainforest now depleted, no ozone, the sun will shine. Don't we know we're running out of time? Are we all such fools to rob this world blind? Don't we know tomorrow never waits on mankind? Cross the rivers far and wild, into the forest like a mother to her child. How the canyons and the mountains sing, John Muir's out there if only we believe.
In 1849, Muir accompanied his father, Daniel, older sister, Sarah, and younger brother, David, to Wisconsin, with his mother, Anne, and four remaining siblings following soon after. Muir fell in love with the diverse landscape of his family's farm, which contained oak woods, prairie, wetland, and glacial lake waters. Muir wrote about the experience in The Story of My Boyhood and Youth. This sudden splash into pure wilderness, baptism in nature's warm heart, how utterly happy it made us, Muir writes. Nature streaming into us, wooingly teaching her wonderful glowing lessons, so unlike the dismal grammar ashes and cinders so long thrashed into us. Here, without knowing it, we were still at school, every wild lesson a love lesson, not whipped, but charmed into us. Oh, that glorious Wisconsin wilderness! At 22, Muir left home to exhibit his inventions, clocks, barometers, table saws, and other items, at the State Fair. There, he meets Jean Carr, a judge of the exhibits, and wife of Ezra Carr, a professor at the University of Wisconsin. Jean became a lifelong mentor to him, and Muir took classes in geology under Dr. Carr. Muir also develops an interest in botany, traveling to Canada for 2 years. Upon his return, he takes employment in a carriage factory in Indianapolis, using his inventiveness to automate the machinery there. In 1867, Muir suffered a blinding eye injury that changed the direction of his life. At work, an awl, a pointed tool for marking surfaces and piercing small holes, punctured his right eyeball, followed by something called sympathetic ophthalmia, in which the second eye mimics the injury to the first. After weeks of painful recovery, Muir regained his sight, and he resolved to, quote, turn his eyes to the fields and woods, unquote. And so he did. He began with an extraordinary 1,000-mile walk from Indianapolis to the Gulf of Mexico. He sailed to Cuba and Panama, crossed the isthmus, and traveled up the west coast. He landed in San Francisco in 1868, and although he would travel around the world still, California became his home. For the next several years, Muir lived in the Yosemite Valley, writing, studying, and exploring. We are now in the mountains and they are in us, Muir would later write. Kindling enthusiasm, making every nerve quiver, filling every pore and cell of us. No temple made with hands can compare with Yosemite. On his many excursions into the backcountry of Yosemite, he traveled alone, carrying only a tin cup, a handful of tea, a loaf of bread, and a copy of Emerson. Indeed, Muir was visited by Ralph Waldo Emerson, the popular American poet and lecturer, who encouraged him to teach about his experiences at Harvard. Muir declined, writing later that, quote, I never for a moment thought of giving up God's big show for a mere professorship, unquote. Eventually, Muir spent more time in the Bay Area, where he'd meet his wife, Louie, and manage a fruit farm near Martinez. After raising a family, Muir would again turn his attentions to preservation of the natural world. More on this part of Muir's life after music from Dean Owens.
I like the springtime. Been such a long time coming. We've made it through. springtime, springtime. This is my kind of day. This is my kind of day. Can't get enough of you. Can't get enough of you.
This is Simply Scottish, available on iTunes and at simplyscottish.com. On this episode, an intimate look at the life and work of John Muir. In 1880, Muir married Louise Strentzel, a daughter of a prominent fruit rancher, also an immigrant, from Poland. For the next decade, Muir turned his attention to family life and the growing of pears and grapes and other fruits on the family fruit farm near Martinez. Muir's first daughter, Wanda, was born in 1881, and Helen, their second, in 1885. Muir doted on his girls, and they occasionally accompanied him on his travels. Income from the farm allowed Muir to continue his efforts in preservation. In 1889, Century magazine associate editor Robert Underwood Johnson camped with Muir in the Tulum Meadows in Yosemite, seeing firsthand the damage a large flock of sheep had done to the grassland. Johnson agreed to publish articles by Muir on preserving the Sierra High Country, and he used his influence to introduce a bill to Congress to make the Yosemite area into a national park, modeled after Yellowstone. In 1890, the U.S. Congress passed a bill that followed Muir's recommendations, and the Yosemite became protected land. In 1892, Muir went further in protecting the wild lands he so loved and appreciated. He and a number of his supporters founded the Sierra Club, the oldest, largest, and most influential grassroots environmental organization in the U.S. And in 1903, President Theodore Roosevelt accompanied Muir on a visit to Yosemite. While traveling, Muir told the president about state mismanagement of the valley and rampant exploitation of the valley's resources. He was able to persuade Roosevelt that the best way to protect the valley was through federal control and management. The duo camped in the backcountry, talking late into the night and greeted by a fresh snowfall in the morning. Both men would never forget that night. Shortly after his wife's death in 1905, Muir traveled with his daughter Helen to Arizona in hopes she would recover from illness. While there, he discovered the Petrified Forest and the Grand Canyon, campaigning for their protection. Muir continued to write about his experiences in nature and the importance of preservation until his death in 1914. But as he once said, no amount of word-making will ever make a single soul to know these mountains. One day's exposure to mountains is better than a cartload of books. He also came to know God in a way he could never grasp when his father had him read the Bible every day back in Scotland. As Muir wrote in Travels in Alaska, "Every particle of rock or water or air has God by its side leading it the way it should go. The clearest way into the universe is through a forest wilderness. In God's wildness is the hope of the world." John Muir traveled to every continent except one, the one without trees, Antarctica. He had the privilege of studying nature firsthand, and he shared his life-changing experiences in his writings. And in growing to love nature, he took it upon himself to protect it, working to establish some of America's first national parks and giving millions of people the chance to fall in love with the natural world around them. If you're interested in continuing the conservation and nature awareness work that John Muir carried on, here are a few places you can turn. Get involved with the programs and activities of the John Muir Association at www.johnmuirassociation.org. Support conservation in Scotland with the John Muir Trust at www.jmt.org. And be part of Muir's own co-created Sierra Club at www.sierraclub.org. That's all for this episode of Simply Scottish. Listen to other episodes online at simplyscottish.com. And join our conversation on all things Scottish on our Facebook page, facebook.com/simplyscottish. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again soon for more of all things Scottish, right here on Simply Scottish.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content is copyright 2012, Simply Scottish Media. All music used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience on the web at www.simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
is over and the shipping days are done. Like a child for the first time, I lie here again.